Welcome to episode 9. This is How Did I Get Here? I'm your host, Johnny Gowdy. I have a big announcement to make. We have a live episode that we're going to record, a live podcast of How Did I Get Here? It's going to be Monday, October 3rd at Momo's at 8 p.m. And my guest will be an entire band. It'll be The Coveters, which is kind of an Austin all-star band, which features Susanna Schaffel, who is our very first guest. It features Dan Dyer. It features Michael Kincaid, who also plays with What Made Milwaukee Famous, Mike and the Moon Pies, and tons of other bands. That guy really has more bands than anybody you've ever met. Brad Hauser, who played with the New Bohemians and countless other bands, is a good hang. I produced a record once, and he played bass, and we hung out a lot during that time. He's a great guy. And Warren Hood. And a friend of mine, Jeff Botta, who's a very funny guy. My friend Wayne Sutton, who I've known for a long time, who's in a band called Sister Seven, Little Sister, from here in Austin. So for the first live podcast, I'm very excited. My guest will be The Coveters. It'll be October 3rd, Monday, at Momo's at 8 p.m. My guest today is Amy Cook. She is actually the first guest I've had that I've never met in person until she showed up for the podcast. And we've exchanged some emails. When I listened to her album the first time, I wrote her, I can't remember exactly what I wrote her to see if she wanted to do a show sometime or write a song or something. And she was very sweet, wrote back, and I thought she was real funny in the emails. And then when I wrote her and asked her if she wanted to do the podcast, she was totally into it. And so here we are. We did it today. She came by. And I have to say, I think the fires are going out. The day is beautiful in Austin. It's a lot cooler than it has been. I can't tell if it's like in the 80s or if it's in the 90s, because when it's 108, you can't really gauge coolness, because 100 seems cool as opposed to 108. So I'm happy about that. I'm happy about the live podcast we have coming up. I'll be talking about it in the episodes to come. I hope I don't wear you out advertising it. But if you do live in the Austin area, we would love to have you come out. I don't know if we're going to do questions from the audience yet. I don't know exactly how we're going to do it, but maybe we'll try some stuff. If you have any ideas, you can write on our Facebook page, and let me know what you think. Amy Cook is coming up now. She's really talented, a great singer, a great songwriter. She made a great record called Let the Light In. It was produced by Alejandro Escovedo. And this is my conversation with Amy. Enjoy it. Great song.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I've been listening to your music all morning, familiarizing myself.
Right on.
Mostly, I've been listening to this album. I haven't listened to your earlier albums, which I saw on iTunes, but not that you own up to publicly.
Yeah, you know. So don't bother yourself with all that.
Oh, okay. So I'm with Amy Cook. You live here in Austin. You live in Marfa. Where are you from?
I'm from San Jose, California.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
A California girl.
Uh-huh.
So let's just go back to the beginning.
Okay. The beginning.
The beginning. Well, first of all, you have an album that came out last year called Let the Light In. It was produced by Alejandro Escovedo. And did you write songs with him for that? That's what this last song was from.
Yeah, you know, I didn't get to write any songs with him.
No.
Damn it.
But
still waiting to do that.
But did he help you kind of like put them together?
Definitely.
Once you got
He, I was on the road with him a lot that year. Uh-huh. And we talked about making the record. And he definitely, like, he definitely steered the process in the songs.
Right.
And I was working on songs on the road, and he'd be like, I don't like that.
Right.
Or, you know, that one's great or whatever. So he definitely informed the songs that ended up on the record, and he, you know, picked the final ones and all that. So
good.
Yeah. It was
he was
great.
Fun to work with.
He's a blast to work with. Yeah. I mean, he's cool in the dictionary, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah. I've always had that, you know, total like, I'm Cuban. He's an older Hispanic male. I have a strained relationship with my dad. So I always like, whenever I'm around him, I'm always like, oh, Alejandro, you're so cool. Why can't my dad be like a Mexican Lou Reed?
Yeah, he's also just, he's as nice. He's one of the kindest people.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, he's great. We had a great time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. So you've been supporting that record for the last year.
I have. Well,
what have you done for it?
For the last 6 months,
I've
pretty much been at home.
Okay.
Writing. You
supported
for the next
it for
record.
A little while.
But yeah, I did support it. It's hard out there. You know,
it's hard
to get out there and be on the road
and
actually get people to come see you play.
That is hard. Tour nationally, or do you have pockets that you go to regionally? Like maybe
I toured nationally for the record. I went, I think I went twice to the East Coast, or twice to the West Coast, three times to the East Coast.
And that's good.
Yeah, I toured with the Heartless Bastards, which was
really
fun.
Yeah, I love them.
Erica asked me to come out, and we had a really great time.
That's
and
amazing.
Hacienda was on that tour, too, so.
Wow, so you got to play probably just some really good crowds and stuff.
Yeah, I was lucky to play some really fun clubs and some really fun crowds.
Awesome.
With those guys. And then I toured with Alejandro again after the record came out, also on the West Coast, and I went with David Garza out to New York City. Big New York City.
Is that fun?
Of course.
He's the coolest guy in the world. He actually gets so many props on this podcast. As you listen to him, you'll see.
Good.
It's like every once in a while there's like the David love shower. So you were born then in San Jose.
I was.
And what were your parents? What did they do then? Like, were they young parents, old parents?
They were older parents.
Yeah.
My dad worked at IBM.
Oh.
And it was just, you know, getting started or whatever when he started there. And,
right.
My mom took care of me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You have brothers and sisters?
I did not. I was an only child. Adopted only child.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Much pressure in, in being that kind of that kind of thing.
Well, I bet that informs a lot of what you do.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, there's one of my best friends I'm in a band with was adopted. He just started to get in contact with family, and have you ever done that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did it work out? Was it?
Yeah. I mean, I know my birth mother and I have family on that side, and they're super cool, and it's been...
That's awesome.
It was amazing to meet them and to really kind of go, oh, I look like that person.
Yeah. Wow. Were your adopted parents real supportive of that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, they always had been supportive of it. I think when I was 18, they gave me the name of my birth mother.
Right.
You know, they just wanted to wait till they thought I was old enough to make a, you know, decision about it. So
were they into music? Were they?
Both of my parents were really into music. My mom was really into kind of the pop music of her time,
which was
sort of like she had a lot of 45s of like Peggy Sue and, you know, that like really great, like 2-minute pop songs.
Yeah.
My dad loved folk music. He had the biggest speakers ever, and he didn't rock out with them at all. He played nothing but like Kingston Trio and Limeliners and Simon and Garfunkel.
Did you like that stuff as a kid?
Totally. Yeah, I liked everything as a kid. Like Kenny Rogers was the first record I begged my parents to buy me.
Oh, really?
The, like great Kenny Rogers' greatest hits, like with Lucille. That's kind of a kid's record. Yeah. You know, I think it was like five.
You know what's funny about Lucille is when it came out, I think I was like in fourth grade, and there was a pizza place by my house that had a jukebox and had it had Lucille in it. And I thought in the song he said, "You picked a fine time to leave me, Lucille. 400 children and a crop in the field." And I thought it was so odd that a lady would leave a guy with 400 kids. And it wasn't probably until I was like 25 that I saw someone singing it like in a bar, and I was like, oh, they're saying hungry. So
I love those kind of things about songs
too. What was the first record you ever bought with your own money? Like that you were like, I've got my money, I'm going to the record store and I'm going to spend it on this.
You know, I don't even remember.
Really?
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Mine's cool as shit. It's exactly what a 5-year-old boy would have bought with his own money, with his own dollar. I got it from my aunt. Kung Fu Fighting by Carl Douglas.
Yeah.
It had karate in it.
Awesome.
So I loved it. It was like insane.
That is perfect.
So when did you start playing music? How did you get into music? Like, what was the thing that said where you were like, "Wow, this is," where you stopped listening and started like kind of taking it in a different way?
Well, I always like sung the songs that I heard as a kid, mm-hmm. And then my mom had this guitar that she'd stuck in the attic, and I think when I was like six, somehow I was in the attic and I saw the guitar, and I pulled that thing down. It was an old classical guitar.
And, did one of them play it? Did your dad play it with his
kid? No, my mom had played it at some point. At some point when she was cool, she had played.
Today's like, a Peggy Sue.
Yeah, she had like a book of folk songs. And you know, it was like Kumbaya and Imagine and, you know, all those kinds of things.
So did you teach yourself or did you?
I did. I taught myself the chords.
Really?
There was a little chord book that she had like a folder of all the stuff that she'd learned. So I started kind of just going through the folder, and I taught myself the chords.
Right.
So, and then when I was in the fourth grade, I wanted to take guitar lessons.
So you started early.
Yeah, and by then I knew some chords.
Right.
And then I just stopped till I got into high school, and that's when I got back.
You wanted to take guitar lessons, but you weren't like, I'm going to be a musician. You just kind of liked playing guitar.
I was going to be a singer.
Oh, you were?
Okay. Oh, yeah. I was going to be a singer for sure. But the guitar was... At some point,
what was the thing that convinced you that you could, though? That's always one of my favorite things to hear from people.
I don't think I ever thought I couldn't.
Really? There wasn't like a thing, but you don't remember.
Like I was in church choir when I was a little kid, and I got the solos, and I mean, I always heard positive things about it. Yeah. I don't think I ever thought like. It's like, it was like being adopted. It was just like, you're adopted. Like, I kind of feel that way about singing. It was like, well, I just did it. I didn't really even think about, can I or can I not?
Right.
Like for some reason where I was and everywhere around me, probably the church environment, like it was just like, all right, well, more singing. Like, you're doing this. And,
what kind of church was it?
It was like a non-denominational, like
suburb. So how do you know what color the Pope's shoes are if you're not Catholic?
Well, because when the Pope John Paul died, when he was lying in state, I was like, holy shit.
That man's wearing red shoes.
That man is wearing red shoes. And then I realized every picture of the Pope, he had these red shoes on. And so I looked into the deal with the red shoes, and there's this Italian guy that makes these beautiful shoes and always has for years and years and years.
He makes
the Pope.
The papal shoes,
and if you ever look at a picture of the Pope, he's always in these red shoes. So
it was a non-denominational singing church.
Yes.
My mom used to like to go to one here that was Unity Church. Was it like that?
You know, I
like
haven't.
You didn't
been to
pray,
church
you
in
meditated,
so
and you know what I mean. They used it instead. They used a different. Different verbiage.
It was kind of square for like, it wasn't quite as hip as probably that church.
Okay. like Joey Lee wasn't there when you were a teenager or anything Mm-mm. like that. Okay.
No, I wish he was, though, because that would have been really much cooler.
Yeah, I guess so. So when you got to high school, did you and you got interested in guitar again, what did you do? Did you start a band? Did you start playing out? Did you start writing songs?
Well, high school is a little blurry for a lot of reasons, involving church and family and mental hospitals. But once I got into college, like when I was 18 and I went away to L.A., okay, went into college. That's when I started.
Did you like leave San Jose with a vengeance? Were you getting out of there to get to L.A.?
Yeah.
If I ever ask you anything you don't want to talk about, you can just answer.
No,
short
no,
answers
it's
and I'll
fine.
Get the
I just like I didn't get along with my parents.
Right.
I didn't,
right. Yeah.
Like it, of course. Yeah. Like who gets along with her? I guess some people do.
Some people do. But you, there's that time. I know the tension. You got to go.
Yeah, got to go. But I made it through the high school bit. Went to college. Went to L.A.
Did you finish college?
I did.
Did you? What
actually?
You, what's your degree in?
It's in English literature.
Oh, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That helps you with the writing and everything.
Well, that's why I did it, because I was like, well, I don't want to major in music, because I'm an idiot.
Right. Well, no, I did the same kind of thing.
Yeah, and so I decided that English would be good, because lyrics. So I just did that, and it was fun. But while I was in college, I started playing, like, open mics in North Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
At the Iguana Cafe, which does not exist anymore.
I don't know that place.
Yeah.
So, but being in that Mecca, were you doing like folky kind of acoustic,
yes,
open mics? But were you writing like pop songs and at that point, or were
I
they
think
kind
I would,
of
they were
more,
kind of folky,
okay,
and real, like, you know, I was studying English lit, so
yeah, wordy.
You know,
they were
verbose. They were,
songs.
They were way too verbose. Too much Victorian literature being clogged in my brain.
Did you reference that stuff in your songs?
No.
That
well, I tried
so
not
cool.
to, you know. But
So did you played through college, and then what was your what changed your is your phone gonna ring?
Sorry,
oh, it's vibrating.
Yeah,
that's all right.
It's just vibing, man. My phone's vibing.
Sometimes they vibe. You were playing the open mics. Did you play like coffee houses and stuff like that? Or you just want to play in a couple songs, or you played like whole sets, had Amy Cook shows?
I had Amy Cook shows.
Did you ever change your name?
I never changed my name, man. And it's always been so tempting, you know, especially now, because no one goes by their real name.
Right.
Except
I
David
do.
Garza, man.
Yeah.
And you.
I go by my
name.
Yeah, you. Yeah, we're the only ones out there left with names.
With real names. But yeah, no, I always kept my name. I started playing in college at coffee shops, yeah.
Were you recording demos and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And
I recorded
on your own
one.
Or with
I studios? Had this, my friend Barbara Tanner, I was on the basketball team in college.
Were you good?
At Pepperdine.
Oh, you went to Pepperdine. Awesome. In Santa Barbara, right?
It's in Malibu.
Malibu, sorry.
Yeah, because I saw the brochure. I was living in the middle of California for my senior year in Visalia. It's like farm country.
Okay.
And it's pretty horrible.
Really?
In a lot of ways. It's hot and gross and real kind of right-wingy.
Yeah.
And I was living there and, oh shit, what was I talking about?
You were talking about recording. And your friend.
She just smoked less pot before I came to the podcast this morning.
That's all right.
So I saw the brochure for Pepperdine.
Right.
The guy came with the brochure and it had like beaches and waves. And,
right.
And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Let's go there. So.
And so that's where you moved.
So that's where I moved. And then I walked onto the basketball team and I met this girl, Barbara Tanner, who was on the basketball team. And she played guitar.
Right.
So we started Tanner and Cook.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And that's the only band that I've been in, Tanner and Cook. And that's when we started playing out at like coffee shops and Hollywood
as a duo?
As
and
Tanner
and
Cook,
and you sang harmonies
yeah.
And like the whole...
Yeah, we each wrote songs and then we'd sing harmonies for each other's songs. And it was cool. It was like the first experience I had with like singing somebody else's song.
Right.
With them working on my song. And
did you write songs together too? You collaborate on...
Yeah, we collaborated on some stuff, yeah.
Did you guys have fun? Did you tour? Did you make an album?
We made an album, but we didn't tour or anything.
Right.
Okay. But it was fun. I still talked about, hey, Barbara.
Yeah.
Hey, Tanner. Barbara Tanner.
Tanner and Cook.
She goes by Tanner. Yeah, Tanner and Cook. And, yeah, and then after that, I just started going by Amy Cook. And right after I graduated, I made another record.
And how did you do that? Did you get a deal? Did you save up money? Did you borrow money?
I didn't get a deal. It was like a real time in LA where people were doing these kind of experimental. Like there were a lot of producers because people were just getting the idea that you could make a real record on a computer.
Okay.
So there were
what
these
year is that? If you don't mind me asking.
No, it was when did I graduate? Like 97 or 8.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
And it was like, I could make something that goes on the radio with this computer,
right.
You know,
yeah.
or whatever. And so these guys came and they were like, hey, we want to make a record with you. And, you know, like, we just want to do it. And,
right.
of course, I was like, somebody wants me.
Yeah.
And so we did it. And it was actually really good in terms of, like, getting exposed to the music business and in totally the bad way and in the good way and in every way.
Yeah, so what happened? You made the record?
I made the record, and then it was like I signed this really stupid thing, of course.
Like a production deal
Like
thing.
A production
yeah,
deal
yeah.
that was like, if you get signed,
if anything
happens, which is like the story of musicians' life, right? If anything happens.
Yeah, we'll be here.
Yeah.
Catching your money.
Exactly.
Forever.
It was like then they would get, it was something crazy, like $10,000 a song, like per song that they'd recorded already
wow.
for the demo. And then
right.
like it was crazy. Like it was numbers that you don't even think about now. Like, and so of course nobody even wanted to talk about that with me. They were just like, okay, who are these guys? Let's get rid of them and let's get new songs.
Right,
let's have you
course.
Sing this song from this girl and this
right.
single from.
And we're gonna make you this person.
And
so did you get
person.
A lot of that there? I mean, because that happens out there.
I did.
I mean,
yeah, I got
a lot
of that.
Like,
I got a lot of meetings with everybody, and I got a lot of, you know, I don't hear the single, which is true. You know, it probably wasn't anything on there that.
Right.
But, you know.
Yeah. And so they said, did they?
So they wanted me to sing this song or that song here,
right.
and they played me these songs though, but. And they weren't good. Like,
yeah, no.
I just didn't like them. And I knew in my heart that I didn't want to be what they wanted me to be, you know? And so I just was like, well, I'll go bartend some more. And
that's good.
You know, I didn't want that. And so I took that record that I'd made with those guys and I got myself out of that deal. And I just kind of put it out. I sold it at shows and...
At this point, were you playing with the band, or were you just doing solo shows?
I had a band in LA that I'd play with.
And
there's a lot of great players.
Sort of,
out there.
What was that? What was the thing with the record? Was it like a live band playing? Was it like drum machine kind of thing?
Drum machine kind of thing on like half of it, and then Sammy, who played on "Let the Light In," he was my first drummer, and he played on that record too.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah, he's awesome. Sammy.
Yeah, I like when things go full circle.
Yeah, yeah. So my friend Sammy played on half of it, and then. There was a lot of live stuff. A lot of good musicians came in and played, but then they programmed a lot of that stuff in there. And
so you were out there selling the record and playing shows. And then what was the next move that you made?
Well, the next move was this guy came in to see me play at Genghis Cohen. And he just happened to be in the bar. And he's like, hey, I've got a friend that's a music supervisor. Do you mind if I give this CD to him?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. Because everybody wants to do something for you.
Right.
You know, in LA. And I was like, sure. Next thing I know, this guy called me and he starts using my song in like... Dawson's Creek.
Oh wow.
And Felicity and it ends up
late 90s shows on the CW.
Exactly. Exactly. Like teen angst 101 shows, you know. So there was probably like 15 of those or 20 of those.
And did you have a publishing deal on that, or you owned all of your
own? No, I own all my own publishing.
Own.
Uh-huh. And I still do. And I still get checks for that stuff.
Amazing.
I mean, I still get
paid. I bet
paid
you do because they
that.
Sell DVDs. They're on reruns.
Yeah,
and
I'm now getting because of the digital stuff. Now they're paying me again.
Retro.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, I'm not rolling in the money here or anything,
no.
but it's like, it's a nice little like thing to say, okay, I'm in this. I'm doing something. You know, like this is.
That's a really good feeling.
Yeah. So it just, it kind of kept me going. Like, because then quarterly I'd get something that'd be like, you're on the right track.
Right.
You know?
Were you still bartending and stuff? And
yeah, I had all kinds of weird jobs in L.A. I worked at the opera for as a production assistant at the L.A. Opera.
Wow, that's cool.
For a lot of years towards the end of the time that I lived in L.A. I'd just go run errands and bring them food and stuff.
Still, it's probably cool people to be around.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah. So from those with that money, did you make more recordings and more records or?
I always ended up making more stuff and finding people to work with and
out there.
Yeah, and I've always made stuff on my computer and then what did I do? Oh, I got a manager that had a friend. I had this guy that had a friend. I made another record. I actually borrowed some money from some friends,
right?
Like $10,000, to make another record.
Early Kickstarter idea.
Early Kickstarter idea,
bro.
Hey.
So they gave you the $10,000. It's pretty nice.
Really
nice. They lent it to you.
Yeah, a few friends, and it was awesome. And that record I made was, we made it in LA again, and I don't know. I didn't have my heart into it in a way. You know, I was just trying to, I didn't know who I was or what I wanted to be anymore. I was just like, I'm going to write this song and that's it. Like, maybe it's good. I have no idea. Yeah. And I don't even know what I was trying to do anymore. I just didnn't know what else to do. I was just flailing. So
when I thought that Let the Light In what was your first record, I thought it was weird that you had such a strong sense of yourself. So now that you're telling me this, I realize you're human and you went through a period where I know that feeling you're going through. You haven't found your voice yet.
Right. It's just like, yeah.
And so then you just moved from LA.
Well, what did I do? I played at the Hotel Cafe a lot. Uh-huh. When that was just getting going. And so I made a lot of good friends there.
Is that in
there.
San Diego or that's...
No. It's in Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
It's at like Cahuenga and Hollywood and Vine.
Okay.
Right there. And that was really fun because it felt like a community.
Yeah.
It was like we'd all go there on Sundays and do kind of an like open mic jam.
Yeah.
You know. And
is there anyone we'd know that...
Well, Gary Jules was playing there. He's a singer-songwriter. He's really great. Alexi Murdoch was out there. I don't know if there's a lot of people you'd know that started out there.
Right.
But a lot of people came in.
Right. I know. I know Bob Schneider plays out there, and I know that I think Steve Poltz plays there and stuff. Some people that I kind of know.
Yeah, yeah.
So go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that was a...
So you started doing
that. That was a fun time, and... Played there, and I think I started recording with a bunch of other people whenever I could, and just kind of wasn't sure what to do, and just kept doing it.
Yeah, but trying to keep on finding yourself, like a journey of
exactly.
Yeah,
self-discovery. I started listening to a lot of different kinds of music in those years, like
what all? What were you listening to before?
I listened to like a lot of pop and folk and people that I really loved, and I started. I loved, like in high school, I really loved Depeche Mode and The Cure and Morrissey and The Smiths and all that. And then I got like really into Sean Colvin and Patti Griffin and like really folk, like Bob Dylan and really beautiful songwriters,
right.
You know, with really beautiful lyrics. And I think at that point I was like, okay, everyone's talking about like the Rolling Stones and stuff.
Oh, right. So you had never really delved into that
yet. I hadn't really
yet.
Like done that. Like I'd done kind of like... whatever the kids were doing when I was growing up, you know, like Guns N' Roses and whatever. But I wanted to go back and like understand music in a different way that I hadn't really ever done. So
the first band that sounded like they had VD.
Yes, exactly.
And drug problems, yeah.
So I, and also I had at that point heard Jeff Buckley and Got Grace.
Okay, yeah.
And that kind of was like a doorway.
Yeah.
For me, like it was something that I really connected to.
Yeah.
But that also, like, you could go, oh, where did this come from? And it was so like, oh, that, like Nina Simone. And I could go listen to Nina Simone. And then I was like, oh, what is that? Oh, well, that's, he liked Led Zeppelin. So I was like, oh, Led Zeppelin. And I'd check that out. And it was just a good way, a jumping off point for me to listen to a lot of stuff that I didn't really know about before I was 24, because just who I was and where I came up in.
No.
So then I just, you know, like Velvet Underground and all that stuff I started really listening to and playing along with and trying to understand. And so
was all that stuff, the Velvet Underground and bands that kind of spawned from that, were bands that definitely to me influenced like the Smiths, because I was the same way. I listened to the Smiths, although that's not true, because we had that record. My mom had that record, the Banana record, and I loved Sunday Morning.
Song's awesome.
And I loved Waiting for My Man, but as soon as Venus and Furs came on, like, I'd be like, you know, I'd freak out and get scared, because music used to scare the shit out of me when I was a kid. Some of it did.
It did.
Like, they listened to, my mom was married to this dude for a while, and they had King Crimson, the Court of the Crimson King, you know, mm-hmm. that freaky painting on the front of it, that dude screaming, and the music's, like, equally as disturbing. But I remember if that record was kind of out in the room where we, for a little while, we lived in the schoolhouse that that was made at the turn of the century, so like in 1900. So the bathrooms were outside, and my room was like this giant, you know, hardwood, 15-foot-high ceiling classroom with like blackboards all around it. It was really badass. And there was a little room that we used to go into, and that's where the record player was and all the records. And if I went in there and that record was out, I'd run out of the room. Like, I didn't even have the courage to go up and, like, turn it around. But I was, like, 6 years old, and I'd just be like, no, it's out! Ah! You know? So...
That's so funny.
So then when I got into that stuff, then I started realizing a lot of the English stuff that I was listening to, like The Cure, Depeche Mode, and The Smiths and stuff, was all kind of started from this scene in New York and, you know, kind of more underground early 70s art music.
Right.
So
interesting.
So you went back into music and started getting into the Stones and...
Yeah, I think that's that kind of... I took that last, like, that part of my 20s. It seems like such wasted time. You know, when you kind of look back and... I don't know. Maybe I'm getting older. I'm just getting older.
But, yeah.
I just, like, start looking back and, like, some of it just feels like, oh, my God, it was just sort of, like, wasted time.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that... You know, I was learning, and I was working, and I wasn't maybe doing the thing I thought I was going to be doing.
Right, but you were gaining experiences that enrich your life, and
that lead you to a place where you can do like a record that maybe you don't disown at the end of the day.
Exactly.
You know,
so you're at the hotel cafe, and how long were you in that scene?
I think probably just like a couple years.
Okay.
And then that's when I just started getting like, I gotta move out of here.
Gotta move out of LA.
Gotta move out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What year was that?
2004.
Okay.
2003.
Yeah.
It was 2003.
And so where'd you go from there?
Marfa.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's like a little bit, that was like at the very beginning of the whole Marfa thing, right? The early 2000s?
You know, I don't mean it's a fad or something,
but Marfa started becoming like a place.
I guess so, you know.
It was very cool to go.
Yeah, my girlfriend was just opening a hotel there. Mm-hmm. And so, and we weren't together at the time, but I was painting. My grandmother taught me how to paint.
Mm-hmm.
And so I paint houses on the side and paint furniture.
I've done that before.
Yeah. And so I think it was her ploy to get me out there, but she was like, I need somebody to help paint out there. Will you come out there? And I was like, Marfa, yeah, cool, all right. But I pretty much just never went back to L.A. I just went back, got my stuff, and came back.
Okay.
So
you went to Marfa, you painted a hotel. Did you write and make music out there?
I did. And I did. And then I think like... After about 8 months, I made a record that I recorded out in Marfa outside.
Oh, really?
At the bunkhouse, yeah. Called The Bunkhouse Recordings.
And so what did you do with that?
I put it out on a label called Marfa Records that my friend Leisha started, basically just to put the record out.
Yeah.
And, I had a mic just like this. It was just like this.
Cool.
And it went one mic, and I recorded like 10 or 11 songs at night with the crickets going and... the stars
on your computer
singing and, had a friend come out and she had a computer her computer, and we just took the files and
awesome is that
them.
Out
mm-hmm.
or, yeah,
it's called The Bunkhouse Recordings.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, it's just like a kind of dreamy sweet little songs, just with crickets and me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so then you made your move to Austin. How did you do that? I mean, obviously it's a music town.
I knew when I went to Marfa that I was going to go to Austin. Mm-hmm. That I couldn't just end up staying in Marfa.
Right.
I mean, I could because it's great, but I could really easily be kind of a hermit.
Yeah.
I knew that I had to go where there were other musicians and opportunities and where I could play. And so after the hotel was open, I came here.
That was the Thunderbird, right?
Yeah, it was the Thunderbird, yeah. She doesn't
I stayed there
run
one
it,
night.
But yeah, she. Now she's got El Cosmico.
Oh, yeah. And you're playing that festival.
Yes, the festival. It's going to be so much fun. Are you going to come?
I can't because I'm in that band Skyrocket.
Oh, and you got shows.
And on the weekends we have to play.
Yeah, that's right.
But I would love to come out. It looks great. I had Kat Edmondson on here the other day, and she's playing out there.
Yeah.
And
I love Kat.
Me too.
Did you have a good chat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know her very well either. You're the first person that I've actually never met physically before this. We have exchanged crazy emails a few times, and I was, at some point we should sit down and make some music.
Yeah, I would love to.
It was really inspiring listening to your record. So you moved to Austin. Did you know a lot of people here? What did you do?
You know, I didn't know very many people here at all. I knew my girlfriend's friends, but I didn't have, you know, I had to navigate my way into my own kind of friendships, and I guess that took a little while.
So what did you start playing when
I started here? I started playing, but it took me a while. Took me like a year, and I was kind of depressed. I didn't know anybody. I had a lot of friends when I'd lived in LA for like 12 years, and now I lived here, and like my girlfriend had a lot of friends and a lot of people around all the time, and I didn't know anybody, and I just felt like, what do I do?
So a little overwhelming.
It took me a while. It took me a while to like kind of get in and figure out like what I was doing and where I fit in and all that. So.
And so what were you doing? You were just out like playing gigs locally by yourself, or did you put a band together? Or?
It took me a while to put a band together, but I did maybe like after the first 8 months or a year, I put a band together, Brad Rice, who I still play with sometimes. He had just moved here. He was playing with my friend Tift.
Okay.
He had just come to Austin, and he was like not really doing anything, want to play. And so I got to start playing with him, which was great. And he brought in his friend Bobby, who now plays with Alejandro.
Bobby Perkins?
Bobby Daniel, who played on my record Let the Light In, played with me for a long time now. He plays with Alejandro. And Nina Singh.
Yeah.
And we played down at Joe's. On the Joe's on 2nd Street for like every Tuesday night for like a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so that's kind of how I
love that Joe's.
Yeah, it's a good Joe's, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my favorite grilled cheese sandwich in the world. And I think that's weird to say, but I've taken people there and I've been like, I know it sounds funny, but just eat the grilled cheese sandwich and shut the fuck up.
Right.
Because it's the best grilled. It is.
Yeah.
It really is.
And I have to say, I mean, it's a challenge, but I would like to say that burger is my favorite burger in this
burger's
town.
Burger's delicious,
like bar none.
Yeah, burger's
Casino
delicious.
Casino El Camino, what? Like Joe's.
I don't like to down any places, but there are places where the people that work there, man, this sounds like an old man talking, and I'm very hip. I used to have earrings. I have tattoos.
You're very hip. I can vouch
for this. I've gotten a blowjob in a bathroom before. Oh, my God. I don't edit this. Anyway, so... But I get a little freaked out sometimes when you show up somewhere and people look like they just got, you know, you found them at the Greyhound bus station after they got out of jail and rode across country and they're making your burger. And I'm not judgmental at all, but that does scare me. That keeps me away sometimes from stuff.
Right.
My cousin Megan worked at that Joe's.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, she looks just like me, but boobs. But boobs. She does. So you started playing at Joe's, you were playing with your band with Nina and the other guys. I played with Nina off and on since you moved here, like in 1995 or 96.
Yeah.
So did you take that out and go play other places or anything, or were you just kind of like trying to get your shit together here?
Just trying to get my shit together. Yeah. I mean, We played the Continental Club. We played other venues in town, but right. I never, you know, it's still hard for me to figure out the out of town thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it, but it's a hard thing to do, you know?
Man, like it is hard to do. It's gotten harder because the money's gotten so much lower over time that it's difficult to go with a group.
Yeah.
And pay them, you know?
Yeah.
So when you travel, do you do it with a smaller band or more solo? Or
I traveled with a band last year.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you would because you just put out the record.
Because I put out the
sure
record.
You're represented
exactly.
Right and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. But I could, I think maybe I'm just not too organized enough to have figured it out before.
Right.
Like I never really had a manager or anybody else.
Right.
And I was like, well, how possibly would I
right, right.
go yeah. out into the country
yeah, and do
and
this.
play music because I don't have any money. Like
right.
this was always like
dude, it's
baffling
that's always,
to me.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, maybe if I were just more resourceful.
Well, I don't know.
But
I think I was
just like, I like writing songs and I just yeah. wanted to sit. And I thought the best use of my time was to just keep getting better, play, write songs, put out records.
Yeah.
So,
I mean this honestly, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, unless you want me to.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. My ass is a smoke-free zone.
Smoke-free zone.
No, you know what? Your record that you made after being here reflects that attitude that you tried to get good at writing songs because it's extremely strong.
I don't know.
Did you get those kind of reviews? I saw David Frick said nice things about you.
Yeah. I mean I've had people said very nice things about the record and they've said very nice things about me and that's been really lovely. I mean, I think that more important to me is that I could be working more, you know, that I could be using the things that I've created to go out and, you know, it's always good to have other people listen to you. It's always good to have a room full of people because it's easier to play.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more fun.
Of course.
So that's always the goal. And
yeah.
It's nice. I think it's helpful to have people say nice things.
Right.
And it's a good start on the way to getting rooms full of people.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
So that's the goal. I just,
yeah.
It's so much more fun for me to play when a room is full.
Yeah.
Like, and it's easier. And
so much easier.
I mean, I've just, that's the goal for me.
Yeah.
Like, I love, it's so kind of people to say nice things.
Yeah.
And I'm flattered.
And it helps.
And it's lovely. And
yeah.
it definitely helps you carry on. But the goal is definitely to play for a room of people because
right.
It's what it's about,
yeah.
You know. It's like why we do it. We don't do it because we want to play, you know,
right.
Go on the road and smoke pot and stay up late in hotel rooms. Like that's not really as fun as it sounds. As I'm making it sound right now.
I just got hungry. So how long did it take before you like what happened in between the Nina band and getting asked to go out on the road with Alejandro?
I made a record called The Sky Observer's Guide.
Okay, so you've made
with
a lot. You've made a lot of records
since I've been here.
Yeah,
I've made three records.
Okay, so where did you make that record? And
I made that record on the corner of behind the Farm to Market, my favorite grocery store, on the corner of Annie and South Congress.
Uh-huh.
There's a little studio back there.
Yeah,
and it's like it's on the alley. And
yeah.
I brought my friend Jamie Meyerson out, who I'd met in L.A., and we have a side project called Fine Day for Flying,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually find Fine Day for Flying on the internet. It's
okay.
It's a lot different than Amy Cook. Write that down. Yeah.
So then what happened?
Jamie came out, and Brad and Bobby and Nina, that band that I've been playing with, we got together and made this record called The Sky Observer's Guide. Yeah.
And
it came out.
It came out. You kept on playing shows.
Kept on playing shows.
And then you made another record?
I actually toured for the Sky Observer's Guide, too.
Okay. Where all did you tour?
I took just Bobby,
okay.
My bass player, and Bobby and I went to the East Coast, and we just went up and down the East Coast.
Is that your first time out there?
It was, actually.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that was my first time going out on the road
did you enjoy it?
Great time.
There's short drives out there.
I know.
That's what I've always liked.
It's a
it
lot
better
of fun.
Than the West Coast because it's not as Like, you're not going, like, from Vegas to Portland or anything.
Yeah.
It's always, like, 2 or 3 hours or something.
Yeah.
So,
and I collaborated on this record with an artist named Amy Adler.
I don't know that name. Is she from here?
Or no, she's collected a little bit, but she's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And we had this idea before I did the record that she would do drawings, and I would do, and I would start writing, and we would collaborate the whole way. Like, each would inform the other.
Wow.
And so we kind of did that.
Yeah.
And it was fun. And we released the record at the Aspen Museum of Art, and awesome. They had the drawings there. And so we did a show there.
See, that's cool. I love it when people do something that's different than the ordinary. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And so the album had a
response about that from that.
Yeah, I mean it was fun. It was a small, well curated response.
Right.
We had a little thing in the record about the artist and about the art and about the collaboration, and then the Aspen Museum had another series of her work there too, and she had just done a children's book with her art in it. So it was my record and her children's book in the two different rooms, and I played, and it was fun. And then we went to LA and did the same thing at her gallery in LA, and so that was awesome. Kind of what I did for that, and then I toured on the East Coast, and then that was it. That out on my record label, which is called Root House, me and Liz.
Excellent. And you guys, are you the only artist on the label? Do you sign other bands?
No, Adam Bork's on the label.
I've got a disc right here. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, man, give it up. Do you know Adam Bork? He used to go by Earth Pig.
Yeah, I know Adam. Love Adam.
He's on Root House Records, too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. He lives in Marfa now, right?
He does. He has, he and his wife Krista have the Food Shark.
Oh, nice.
And it serves delicious Marfalafels for you every day.
Marfalafels.
Except for, when are they closed? Can't remember. Monday? Tuesday?
I don't know.
Anyway, so go check out...
I love Earth Pig.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes based on it. He's an amazing artist, too. Like,
he's
as
incredible.
An artist.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And this whole thing.
Yeah, he plays
he's
the guitar on his lap.
He plays with it on his lap, and he plays it's weird.
Weird tunings, upside down keys.
And
it's
he's
crazy.
Funny. Good sense of humor.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's good that you guys have him on your label.
Yeah, yeah. He's awesome.
So what do you do? Like, you have this label. You started this label. You obviously get a DBA. You get a tax ID number.
Uh-huh.
You become a business.
Yep.
And do you hire outside publicists? Like, do you hire publicists to work these records?
For the
records?
Label, yes. We hire publicists to work the record, and we actually hired, when the record came out, we hired somebody to run the label.
Okay, cool.
So we hired somebody to run the release.
Yeah.
Of Let the Light In.
Kind of orchestrate it.
Mm-hmm. And so we hired...
Before we get to Get the Light In, So you put out that record, was it then, and you guys had your own label at that point, were you hiring publicists and doing stuff for the...
For Sky Observer's Guide?
Yes.
No.
No, okay. But you just kind of did it yourself and kind of like mailed out the CDs
Yeah, we did
whatever.
It all through...
And then what was your next move after that?
My next move was probably to get a little depressed about...
The postpartum
depression.
I literally just had the longest conversation with my aunt about this the other day. So yeah, go ahead. I know I had to explain it to her.
And then after you do the record and then you're done with the tour and you're like, okay, so I did that and now I've got to figure out what to do next because this is just, you know, I got to work, I got to do it. And I just...
Well, they all said that you have so much hope, you know, when you're alone. Not alone, but you're with your music and you're making it. And there's like 4 or 5 people that are involved with this. And everyone's like, this is the greatest thing that ever happened. And then you get to a point in the middle of making the record where you're like, this is the worst fucking thing anyone's ever made. And then like a couple of days later, you're like, again, you're like, fuck yes, this is just the greatest. This is like the Sgt. Pepper of 2000.
I'm going to save the world.
Yeah, exactly. Bono's going to cry when he hears this. And then no one cares when you put it out. It's like this. Instead of like an atom bob sound, it's like, ding. And you're like...
That's so true.
But you can spend so much time, too. I mean, I spent on my last record that I put, I spent a year and a half before it came out. And then, like, 3 months playing shows before I went into semi-retirement for a year. Seriously.
So,
I totally understand. I think everybody, except for, like, people that sell millions of records, go through that.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't even think, I don't even know that I think it deserves to make more than a dink. I just think that it's, whether or not you look back and think, I just think you want it to, have hope for what you've created. Even if you look back and go, well, I kind of see why it only made a dink. You know, it's still that you've created it at that point. So, but at some point between The Sky Observer's Guide and Let the Light In, I was walking just on South Congress, and my girlfriend Liz and Alejandro Escovedo, kind of acquaintances just from the years of living in Austin.
Right.
And I'd kind of, you know, said hello now and again, like at Las Manitas, God rest its soul.
I know.
And he asked me, he said, hey, I've heard your songs on MySpace. That's how long ago it was. MySpace.
I like it. Sounds like it was a time before the internet and everything. It's a bit time before electricity. There was a thing called MySpace.
Exactly. And he's like, yeah, they're really good. They're really good. And I was like, he's like, we should go. You should come out and open for us sometime. And I was like,
wow.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, like in
it's
LA,
just
it's
that
like,
easy.
Yeah. Sure, I'll be on your TV show or
right, whatever. Yeah.
Only this time.
Yeah.
It actually, you know, like the next month he was going out, or in the next 3 months. And the management called and they were like, here's the dates. Do you want to do them?
Yeah.
And I was like, yes.
What record was he supporting at the time? You know, the one that exploded.
He was supporting Real Animal.
Real Animal.
Yeah, it was the
right.
Real Animal okay. tour.
And that was a big record for him. I mean, that was
Yeah.
You know.
And I would go out.
That's got to also give you hope. And it's because his success during that time gave me hope, because here's a guy, you know, that's definitely a lot further along than us.
Totally.
And it's definitely seen darker times than me, and I don't know about you, but
absolutely.
But guys, and you know, it happens for you even when you're like in your 50s. Like,
yeah,
fucking amazing is that?
Yeah.
So
I think the great thing about I mean, he's the first person that really said let's go, come on, like took me under his wing and was like you can do this, and
that's awesome.
Let's go. And he would get me on stage, having me like sing solos and songs I didn't know, and like just to have me be uncomfortable, you know, like he would push me to do things where I would be horrified, and it was great. Like we'd walk into the audience every night, he'd pull me up for like 4 or 5 songs, and it'd just be me, David Polkingham, and him like walking through the audience singing songs acoustically in like 500 seat rooms.
Awesome.
You know, and it was like such a great experience.
Yeah,
like learning. Those tours were just, I mean, they were amazing.
Yeah. So would you guys stay up at night and talk, and he would give you advice, and you could ask him questions, and he would tell you stories, and
yeah, I mean, like,
wow,
that's exactly what would happen. It was
that
great.
Is awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
So you came out of that a lot more confident, did you?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I think when somebody that you really respect, respects you,
yeah.
I think that that's, I don't think there's anything better than that.
I mean, not for an artist, it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah. So, you know, he would introduce this, me, and he would say, you know, Hotel Lights was, he's like, this is, I think, the best song I've ever heard. Stuff like that. And you're just like, this is such a gift. You know, like what a generous person. He's just the most generous person that I've ever known.
When he likes something, he's very demonstrative about his affection towards, especially, you know, things, music that he likes.
He's just a music fan.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have any, like, ego about somebody else's,
you're not going to take
good,
anything
gonna,
away from him.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't have any problem with that. David's like that, too.
Totally.
He's not worried about getting robbed.
Mm-mm.
So you guys did that tour, and during that tour, you guys would talk, and then did he offer to produce your record?
Yeah, there was, I can't remember, I think we went out 2 or 3 times that in that time period. There were a couple 3-week tours. And
were you playing solo on those, or were you?
I played solo, and he was playing in duos or trios at that point, on the runs that I was going on.
Right.
On the full band runs, he would have other local openers, or he would have like Hacienda, I think, open sometimes.
Okay.
but yeah, I opened solo, and we were, he said, oh man, I want to produce this or something, like just joking around. Right. And I was like, okay. You know, it just, yeah. And then I kind of followed up on it, uh-huh. And he was just into it. Every time I mentioned it, you know, every time I mentioned it, he was like, let's do it, let's do it. So I think you just have to, that's the other thing I've learned is that people will, if you ask someone to do something or if they.
As long as you follow through with it.
Yeah, sometimes they might be like, well, why didn't they?
Yeah.
Why? I wonder why she didn't ever.
Yeah.
Well, partly because you never tried or asked or,
I had that experience with Stephen Barber when I did my last record. I was playing it for him one night at Dave's house. We were eating dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, wow, you did the string arrangement. And I told him, and he was like, oh. I was like, man, I would have asked you, but like, A, I'm embarrassed. B, like,
because you're a genius.
Yeah, I don't.
Because you are.
I don't ever want to get laughed at, but he was like, man, I would have done it. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, shit. But, you know, it turned out good. But still, yeah, I should have asked.
You never know.
I haven't thought about asking him, but then I would talk myself out of it.
Yeah, I think as I get, another thing, as I get older, I think this is the first year I've said things like, well, as I get older, and all the kids look like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
But as I get older, I think, man, I could have just asked.
Yeah.
Like, and someone could have said, no, what? Am I going to be embarrassed? So?
Yeah.
Like, and then what?
You're not really going to be embarrassed, probably even.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
So did you put, you and Liz and the label, at that point, it was just you two at the label. And you started,
and Isadora.
You started putting together the songs. Oh, and Isadora, another mm-hmm. person. That's a girl that runs it.
She's around, yeah, she's always been around helping with the label, yeah.
So you got, whose idea of like how did you, do you organize the records? You get with Alejandro, or did you kind of like do the executive production, like putting together the studio and I want to do this here and I have this time frame? Or how did you do the logistic stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And then
Alejandro is not so much
logistic man. Yeah, he doesn't seem like the guy. That's
Why would he be that?
I ordered lunch for everyone.
Okay, I have the studio booked from 9 to
Well, that's good. So you guys did that, and that time, did you have the songs going into it, or did you?
We did extensive pre-production, and he was really amazing at it. We went out to his place in Wimberley a bunch of times with the whole band. We worked out the songs. We worked out what we were going to do so that once we got in there, we knew what was going on.
Cool.
We recorded it live. I think the main tracks, we recorded live in 4 days.
Yeah.
And I sang the vocals live in the room with the, like the four of us, the drummer, because David Boyle's so amazing.
Yeah,
I was looking
and
at
that
my
room
drummer.
Is beautiful there.
I was looking at my drummer in the same room, like no partitions, and we used the vocals.
That's awesome.
Like here's a mic in front of my face, and there's a drummer like 20 feet away, and we got those tracks. Like I couldn't believe it.
That's awesome.
It was beautiful. Yeah. So, and then we took a few days to do overdubs, and it was real quick.
It was all pretty much done in like a little over a week.
Yeah.
And did you mix it there? Did you guys take it somewhere to be mixed? Wait,
David Boyle, he mixed it. He had to deal with my ass.
Are you pretty involved when you're working on that stuff? That's always a big question I have.
You know, Alejandro got really busy after we recorded, and we were going back and forth with mixes, and it got hard, and he was on the road, so I sat there with David. And
are you guys like emailing stuff back and forth?
Yeah.
And like,
So yeah, I was pretty involved in the mixing process.
It sounds amazing. I mean, it's mixed up. I just meant like, are you pretty involved when you're recording? Do you, some people get annoyed, but there's some people that are really open about like, sure, you show me what you're thinking or whatever. Are you like a very hands-on in the recording process musician?
I'd just as soon let somebody else, like the person that I trust to make the record, I'd just as soon let them mess with it and worry about the lyrics and the song, the performance. Right. And
well, do you have a preconceived sound when you're coming in? Like, hey, I want this to sound like, have this kind of vibe in the overall recording. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I think we kind of did for Let the Light In, but I think it kind of evolved as we went.
Right.
And like for the record I'm making now, I have kind of an idea.
Right.
Of the sound, but I have more of an idea of who I want to make the record,
right,
in terms of getting me to the sound that
right,
I want,
right,
because
right.
I don't know how to get, like, I know what I like and I know what I want it to be like in my mind,
right,
but I make a lot of my own recordings in my studio, and I play drums and whatever, and it's not good, I don't play them well, but and it's funny to experiment with all that stuff, and because you can make your song sound any kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, that's a drum machine, and here's this song, and now it's kind of techno or whatever. Yeah. So it's you really have to trust the person that's making the record.
Yeah.
Because it's really their aesthetic that's gonna come through, right, unless you're like, okay, this is the guitar tone I want for this.
Right, right.
This is the drum sound I want for this. And I'm not qualified necessarily.
Right. That's good to be able to admit it and not be like one of those people that like, you know, is bossy but has no idea what they're talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was just trying to get a feel for what kind of person you would be in the studio. And you seem like a pretty honest, self-aware person.
Yeah, I think
that doesn't think they're something they're not.
Oh, well.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that the key to anything is just to talk about it.
Yeah.
And not to get like...
Yeah, uptight.
Like uptight or to be in a corner fuming.
Fuming
about something, you know?
Yeah.
You really just have to be open about how you're feeling. So, I know that I don't know how to get to where I want for this next record. That's why I'm having somebody else work on it. I almost feel like I could work on somebody else's record.
Right.
Like, oh, I know you.
Yeah.
You know, like, I know you, and I know what that should sound like.
Right.
And I know where that song should go.
Right.
But, like, when I look at myself, I'm less aware of that.
It's really
like
healthy, though.
You know, I'm like, man, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't trust myself, like, in the way that I would trust myself to,
right,
you know, give somebody else advice.
Yeah.
So it's really good to have somebody good to steer me through this one. Yeah.
Yeah, I did this thing before I made my last album. I made an album just like that on my own, like hardly any people. I had a couple of friends come in and play on certain songs, but I did play everything, and I recorded everything and mixed it all and everything, because I'd spent so much time doing the other.
Yeah.
And I'd never really kind of gotten my, just an all me vibe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like no one's going to come in and say, change this or do that. This is exactly the way I think, and this is how I would record it. So, then the record I made afterwards, I went the complete other way. I had, you know, drummers play drums and, you know, bass players play bass and stuff. So, and engineers engineer, mixing guy mix it. So, it's definitely, you can see, there's such a difference. I'm glad that I was able to do that one record, but I didn't, you know, I wouldn't give up being able to work with people and getting an outside perspective, you know, for anything.
Totally.
So when you were done with that record, that's when you guys put together, started going stronger with the label and got publicists and, like, because this was a bigger record and definitely probably sonically had a lot more strength to it, where it would hold up against everything else on, you know,
exactly,
played on the radio and stuff like that. So did you hire radio people?
We hired radio people, we got a really great radio guy that loved the record. Mm-hmm. So that was really good. And we worked it like a normal record, you know.
Yeah.
We got a publicist, radio guy, you know, it plays on Sirius and some of those,
right,
on some of those stations, and people say they hear it wherever they live sometimes.
Yeah.
Like they'll hear a song, and so that's cool.
Yeah. Did you feel like you guys did a good job with it? Like you were able to really, cause
I feel like it was, I do. I feel like it was a good effort.
Yeah.
I feel like people kind of, like my name kind of trickled out there.
It definitely did.
You know, and I feel like people are like, oh yeah, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I became very aware of you when that record came out. Like, I knew because I was friends with Dave, and he told me you were coming in to record. I didn't know who you were. And then once the record came out, I maybe because I already did and I follow and kind of check up and see how, you know, what was going on with it. But you definitely had a really good, like, you know, that push at the time when your name is kind of everywhere and, you know.
Yeah. And I think, you know what, I think that you have to do that. I think if you're going to put money aside for a record, then put money aside for a publicist, because it, and it's not that you're buying popularity. What you're buying is, it's just, musicians aren't good business people. No. They're not. And I,
some are, but no.
Well, some are.
In general.
Of course. But
you
in general,
I probably are not.
I am not. Yeah. I will speak for myself. I'm not a good business person, but I live with a good business person.
Right.
And if you're going to invest X amount, then just put aside X amount more and just hire somebody to help you get out as much as you can.
Yeah, because you can have the greatest thing in the world in your hand,
but if,
no, you can't,
if nobody
get it
knows.
Anywhere, yeah.
Yeah. So. That's the only advice I really kind of have.
Right.
So if then you can.
You said you toured a half a year or so for it?
I went on 4 or 5 runs for that.
It's good.
Three week long.
Did you go to hit the same places or do you kind of go?
Yeah, I think I hit the same places pretty much.
Yeah,
I mean,
good.
Different clubs, but same towns.
Yeah.
It'll be a little bit different. But usually it's the same kind of places. I mean, now it's like, what, L.A., San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver.
Those are the towns that you,
yeah, I
that
mean,
you hit.
Yeah, on the West Coast. And then there's other here and there. You'll go maybe stop in Santa Barbara or, you know, another little town.
Right.
To keep the trip full. And then on the way back, it's, you know, Salt Lake City. I mean, I think there's just Salt Lake City, Denver. There's just kind of markets that at the stage that I'm at that you... that you would go to.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, you're trying to build something.
You try to build something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you have songs together for your next album.
I do.
You're doing with Craig Street.
Yes.
What all has he worked on?
He has worked on some Chris Whitley records, a couple of Chris Whitley records. Michelle and DeGhiacciolo record called Bitter that I really love. Did the Norah Jones record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like the Norah Jones record?
He did. He did do the Norah Jones record. And, let's see.
How do you know him? How did that, did he?
David Garza.
Oh, really?
Yes. We went and played in New York, David and I. And, Craig came to the show and, he liked the show. And so he said, David told me, hey, Craig really liked the show. He said, if you ever go to make a record, call him up. And so... I called him up.
Yeah, you
and
did
he
it.
Said, yeah. It was crazy. So that was fun.
And so what did you do? You called him up. You said, I want to make a record. And he was like, yes. And what did you start sending him songs, demos that you had?
It was a little more complicated than that because at some point I decided, oh, I'm going to make my... I'm not going to spend any money anymore. I'm going to make my own record.
Right.
I'm done spending money. I had like a little breakdown about like finances and money and like, why would I pay this guy when I can? So I did what you, like I made a record in my house and, I was like, this is the best thing ever. And, it's cool. I like it. And someday I'll put it out.
Do you think that's a direct reaction from, because you're, I didn't see all of the artwork, but definitely the cover artwork for your last album and the sound of it. Doesn't sound like money, but it sounds like someone put some money into it. Looks like someone put some money into it. And then, you know, your reaction afterwards is like, you know, fuck it. Because, you know, I totally understand this.
Yeah,
like everybody goes through this.
When you
did all that stuff, I mean, do you guys, this is a really good question. I don't know if we're boring normal people or your fans or anything, but I always have this question now is like distribution. Did you distribute your record or did you just sell it at shows and certain mom and pop? If there were mom
and
pop
I didn't get distribution for this one. I had distribution
stupid,
for the Sky Observer's Guide, and it was just
it was a
waste.
Yeah,
it was like everything they said they do, they didn't do.
And
I did everything I said I'd do, and then you end up paying them to buy your stuff
to
back.
Buy your
it's just like...
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Like, you knew I wasn't going to sell, you know, whatever. So, I think what is a good thing to do is to try to get that, like, independent
record store
is it
thing.
Sims or it's
no,
something
it's Sims is the
I know but there's another Sims too
oh really
it's an independent music coalition of something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But The Sims here is awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a coalition of independent music stores, and there's some kind of distribution you can get that
right.
just goes to them, and
that's
that
probably
makes
the
a
best
little bit
way
more
to
sense.
Do it. Yeah.
And then now with the internet,
yeah.
I mean, it's just unless you're going to get a thing and you're going to actually sell those records.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Unless there's a need for your record to be in Target in Iowa, there's really no reason to have
right.
that. Right.
Unless people know of you in Iowa that shop at Target.
Exactly. Exactly.
Think about it for a second.
Yeah.
Just think about it.
I don't think I've been to Iowa. I think that's one of the only states I've never been. So, you're going to go make this record in L.A. in October.
I am.
You said. How long are you going to be there?
We're going to make the record in like 5 days.
So you're going to do another quick,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of pre-production?
Craig's going to come out here in a couple weeks, and we're going to do, in a couple weeks, next week, and we're going to do pre-production here.
Cool.
Him and I. So that when we get in the studio, we're only going to have the musicians for those days. So
right.
we're just going to see what happens.
Are yeah. you using musicians from here? Are you using musicians from there?
We're using
your band or?
Musicians from there.
Okay.
Like
his guys.
I'm doing a, okay, man.
Are there any famous guys we'd know that might be doing stuff?
You know, I think Michelle Ndegeocello is going to play bass.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I bet you get her to sing some backup, too, I bet.
Maybe we can get her to sing some backup, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's really, I'm excited about it. And then there's, I think Chris Bruce is going to play guitar, which I'm excited about, too, because he's awesome. And
where's he from?
Chris Bruce, he's a session guy in L.A. He plays a lot of, I think he's on the Sheryl Crow tour now. But I've seen him play with Michelle.
Okay.
And he's great.
Are you going for a different sound? You're not going to make the same kind of record. Are you going for a different, you know, like, oh, this one we're going to have a guy, you know, that plays bongos through the whole thing, and that's going to be the, you know what I mean? Like, are you going for something a little different? What are you going for?
Craig is a real kind of organic guy.
Okay.
He wants the song to just be beautiful. Like, he wants music to be beautiful. So I think if anything, this record is going to be beautiful.
Good.
Like, I don't think it's going to be like a rock record. What I'm writing for this record are songs that are really melodic and pretty.
Yeah.
So.
Good.
I'm going to make kind of a pretty record.
Yeah. And then, and then you'll go through a little...
But it's going to be a little heavy. Don't worry.
What do you mean it's going to be like... heavy?
Just heavy. Just like it'll feel a little heavy.
Okay. All right.
You won't know it. You won't
understand. Some of your heavy stuff on there?
Yeah. I'm working out some heavy stuff.
Okay. I'm working out some heavy stuff.
I've got some heavy stuff to work out.
I know. We all do. It's tough. It's tough out there, Amy. Cook. So is there anything else that we need to know about you? Or I need to know about you? You realize
it was
that
really
as soon
nice
as I turn
to meet
the thing
you.
Off, you have to leave. Yeah, it was really nice
no,
to
that
meet you.
Sucks.
I think you're as cool as I thought you would be. So that's really
I think you're as cool as I thought you'd be too.
Yeah,
and I'm glad I finally got to meet you. But I'm having some anxiety of ending the show because
we don't have to end it.
Oh well.
I mean, we just it's called How Did I Get Here, and we got here.
Like we got here. Okay,
we're here. Next week you start production.
We'll keep going.
Yeah,
and then it'll be How Did I Get Here?
We can have a post. Have you on again whenever.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
We can come back. We can talk forever.
Okay, cool.
We can talk after I turn off the things.
All right, good.
Or we can make a podcast that just you and I listen to about papal clothing and stuff. So let's talk about some things real quick.
Okay.
Do you have any shows outside of El Cosmico, the Trans Pecos Festival on Friday? Except you're playing on the Friday of it. It's a 3-day festival. 4-day? Three or four? Four.
It's 3-day festival.
Thursday?
Yes,
Patty
Griffin and special guest. Barbara Lynn.
What?
Barbara Lynn. Ben Queller.
Uh-huh. It's fantastic.
Fantastic. David Garza is going to be there. He's going to be in the El Cosmico family band.
What's the El Cosmico family band?
Well, Friday night, the family band plays, and the family band involves people that have played El Cosmico in the past,
yeah,
or friends of El Cosmico.
Okay,
and this year it's like,
what is El Cosmico?
Oh, El Cosmico is my girlfriend Liz Lambert has a trailer park in Marfa. It has tents and teepees and trailers. It's like 15 acres.
Yeah.
Every year she has a festival of music and love.
Okay.
Trans-Pecos Festival, Festival of Music and Love. And it's small. There's like, you know, 1,000 people come, 500 to 1,000 people. And so this is it. So family band, Sean Colvin, me, Tiff Merritt, Erica from Heartless Bastards, Alejandro, Ross Casciola, Adam Bork, just people.
Cat Edmondson's
coming.
Cat
that's
Edmondson's
right.
Playing as well.
I'm so excited. Yeah. So just people come and we'll all play like 4 or 5 songs. That's what Friday night will be. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then Saturday night is Black Angels.
Yeah.
And Alejandro again.
Well, good. Mm-hmm. And so people can see you there before you go make your album, and then you don't really have anything else on the books until.
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah. And then you're not going to be able to get rid of me.
Then
you're
going to
see so much of me everywhere. It's going
to
be.
I'll have to call you a publicist next time.
That's right.
No, man. She really liked coming to my house and sitting in my apartment in the dark with the AC off, looking at a bobblehead of Dale Dudley from KLBJ FM.
Is that Dale?
Yeah.
Oh, he's in a straitjacket.
Yep.
That's awesome.
He's seen a straitjacket or two in his time.
Mm-hmm. Well, haven't we all?
I never have.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not going to
lie. Maybe we haven't all. I should rethink this.
No. I'm going to tell you. I think I kind of faked my way out of people putting me in a straitjacket, because I know for sure that there are many times I should have been in a straitjacket. Amy Cook.
Well.
She has an album called Let the Light In. It's out. She's about to go make another album. She has some other albums on iTunes. iTunes that might be questionable
to her.
But thank you so much for doing the podcast. I wish you a lot of luck on your album.
Thanks.
And I can't wait to hear it. And thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you.
Alright, that was my new friend, Amy Cook. Man, I really did have a good time talking to her, and it was nice to listen to it again. Remember, we have a live podcast coming with the Coveters at Momo's on Monday, October 3rd at 8 p.m. Go out and buy Amy's record. It's really, really great. I'm going to play a song right now that she made a video for that I really love the song. It's called Hotel Lights. My guests, I have more guests coming. I believe Ian Moore is going to come by later today, and we're going to do one. And Matt Harris, who plays with Ian in the Lossy Coils and had a band called Oranger. I think they might still be a band. I might be speaking out of turn. And he also plays bass for the Posies. But anyway, thank you so much to Amy Cook for coming out. I'm glad I have a new friend. I'm glad we finally got to sit down and meet. And I will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
Dressed like candy, looking oh so full in love with all the world. And the boys, with their messed up hair and secrets that they keep behind their eyes. My face was always pressed against the glass. Come inside, we watched.